Hello and welcome in. It is that time. Time for episode 2 of the 48 Minutes Podcast. I'm Ross Geiger, the host of the podcast, and I'm thrilled to be joined alongside the co-host of the show, Bruce Bernstein of Pure Hoops Media. Bruce, what's going on tonight?
Hey, man, I'm just getting myself ready to take in some incoming fire from you about the dismal performance that my Celtics put in over this past weekend. So have at it, my man.
Yep, and for the listeners out there, unfortunately, World B is out on assignment for his daily job, so he will not be with us, but he did provide us some fire facts. But yeah, Bruce, let's tip things off with the Boston Celtics. They were out there looking like pins this weekend, just completely getting bowled over at home, not once, but twice by the Orlando Magic this weekend.
You know, they've hit their first real rough patch of the season. You know, they had lost a couple games, you know, on their West Coast road trip, finished it up with a win over the Lakers, and then they're coming home against the lowly Orlando Magic, who aren't so lowly anymore. And they were getting Robert Williams the third back, and Celtics Nation was just beside itself. It's like, man, we are about to just start like rolling. We got Time Lord back. We're playing Orlando. And we just went out there on Friday night, got completely outworked by Orlando, out-rebounded 53-38. They had a home and home, which is really kind of two home games against Orlando. So they played Friday, and then they played Sunday. In the two games, their weapon that has put them at the top of the offensive, you know, whatever you want to call it, leaderboard in the league, their three-point shooting completely went south. In the two games, they shot 23 for 93, which is 24.7%. It's been dismal. Their last five games, they're under 30% on threes, and their 41.6 is team field goal percentage, worst in the NBA. So, Ross, I mean, it just went like the script was flipped on those guys. And I know you want to talk a little Orlando, and so do I, but they're pretty good.
Yeah, yeah. No, I was completely impressed with their composure. Got to give a ton of credit to their head coach, Jamal Mosley. He has those guys competing on both ends of the floor for 48 minutes. And just from start to finish, that team was never flustered when Boston would get back into the game. I thought Cole Anthony did an exceptional job leading that team, getting pressured in the backcourt from Marcus Smart and Malcolm Brogdon. And yeah, he's got those guys playing a high level of basketball right now. And to be honest with you, that second game of the back-to-back in Boston, I wasn't even that surprised they beat you after seeing what they did and how they composed themselves in that first game. Once Jason Tatum was ruled out for that one, I thought, I even texted you. I was like, uh-oh, watch out. Those Orlando Magic are going to come back with some confidence. And yet again, they put you guys to bed.
Well, you know, in the second game on Sunday, Boston played with a lot more intensity on defense. But, I mean, Orlando just kept having answers. I mean, Paolo Banchero was just ridiculous in that game. I mean, he's a, you know, 6 out of 7 shooting threes. He had his career best. And you know, Marcus Smart and Malcolm Brogdon both kind of had some things to say about the team after that weekend. I mean, Smart was saying that, you know, when the shots weren't falling, we let it affect us on defense, you know, and Brogdon was basically saying, you know, they just outworked us. So Marcus Smart has always kind of been the guy on their team that's willing to kind of challenge the guys and call them out, you know, when they're not doing what they're supposed to do. So I suspect when they resume, you know, their play, which is going to be Wednesday night or tonight, probably as this thing's rolling back on Wednesday, we're recording this Tuesday evening. I think they'll probably right the ship, they're going to be tested now. I mean, look, and you can speak to this. When you have the best record, although Milwaukee's at home now, you get a target on your back. You get every team's best effort every night. Yep. And so if you're not ready to work, it doesn't matter that you have Jason Tatum or Jaylen Brown. You know, you got to be ready because these teams are going to be coming after them.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the biggest thing when you have the best record in the league, there's no surprises. Teams know what they're up against. Certainly a Boston Celtic team that returned with most of their core, added Malcolm Brogdon, got Time Lord back. They knew the energy was going to be there from the Boston crowd, excited for Time Lord's return. And there's really no surprises as an opposing team. You know what you see is what you're going to get with the Boston Celtics. And you definitely, you know, got to come prepared. And boy, did the Magic do that this past weekend. And the Magic, Bruce, I want to add, they just got some exciting news here earlier this morning. Wendell Carter is going to be back in the rotation, probably entered right into the starting lineup for their Friday night game. So they're getting healthier, getting a big piece back in Wendell Carter, and they should be a fun team to continue to watch.
I don't think people around the country have gotten a real sense of that team yet, because none of us really have. Right. But they have enormous height on their front line. I mean, listen to some of the size that this team has. All right, Banchero, we said 6'10". Mo Wagner, 6'11". Franz Wagner, 6'10". Bol Bol, 7'2". Mo Bamba, 7 foot. And Wendell Carter Jr., as you just said, 6'10". And then, oh, by the way, Jonathan Isaac, 6'10". I mean, that is some serious height. That's going to be a team. And those are all pretty young guys, too. So if they can basically keep that core together and, you know, get some good play from their backcourt. And you mentioned Cole Anthony. And shoot, I even saw Markelle Fultz make a three-pointer on Monday against Atlanta. It was like, I don't think I ever saw Markelle Fultz make a three-pointer in his NBA career. So I think we really kind of have to watch, keep our eye on Orlando. They're definitely a threat to probably make the play-in tournament and perhaps even inch their way north in the standings from there, Ross.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you there, Bruce. It's been very encouraging to see Markelle Fultz make some progress, start to develop some confidence, and he's really getting some momentum going with his game. And you spoke about the length. You know, the length is something that definitely doesn't surprise me. I was fortunate enough to work with both Jeff Weltman, the president of the team, and general manager John Hammond, both guys that were in Milwaukee with me at the time. And length is something they've always liked. I mean, when we drafted Giannis in Milwaukee, we had John Henson, who we had drafted the year prior. And the year prior to that, we had Larry Sanders. Not sure if you remember Larry, but we had all the length too. So they're kind of starting to build the same young, lengthy team that they once had in Milwaukee. So it's been very fun for me to watch, and definitely comes to no surprise that, you know, they have that size on that team.
I remember Larry Sanders really well. I remember going to a Bucks-Celtics game in Boston. It was early in the season. I forget what year it was. And I remember I was sitting next to then-owner Herbert Cole, because the PR guy for the Bucks, who you probably know, Dan Smicek, had hooked me up with some tickets. So I was sitting next to Herb Cole, and Larry Sanders had 8 block shots in that game. That's what I remember about Larry Sanders.
Yeah, he was a heck of a defender. Obviously, his career was cut short, but definitely a fun guy that brought the energy on the defensive end. So glad you remember him. You know, I know a lot of Bucks fans definitely loved his time in Milwaukee. He was a fan favorite. But yeah, Magic will be fun to watch moving forward. With the Celtics losing those two games and the Bucks getting a big win in New Orleans last night, things in the Eastern Conference are really starting to tighten up in the standings. So definitely want to touch upon that with you here, Bruce. Milwaukee and Boston are currently tied for the top spot. Bucks hold the edge as they have played an extra game. But they're right there. Cleveland, Brooklyn, they're within 3 games of that top spot. And then Philly, who's been on the rise along with the New York Knicks, staying hot now, just 4.5 games back. And Brooklyn's right there as well. So it's a bunched up top 6 amongst those Eastern Conference teams.
Yeah, I mean, as of Tuesday night, the Bucks have won 10 out of their last 13, taking over the best record in the league. And on Monday night when they played New Orleans, Giannis was just ridiculous. I mean, they got to replace the rims at the Smoothie King Center, because that guy was throwing down some dunks that were just so ridiculously powerful. I'm thinking to myself, I'm surprised he didn't bring a backboard down. And I got to say one more thing. I really like those blue uniforms with the Bucks. Those are nice. Those are nice. It's a nice shade of blue. And look, I mean, and they've done well in their green. They have history there, but I hope they go with those frequently, because they look great on TV. And that's just a cool shade of blue. I just really like it. And you know, but they, but you know, the as you mentioned, how tighter things getting in the East, their next three games, they're playing the iron in the East. They have Wednesday at Cleveland. They have Friday at Brooklyn, and then Sunday at Boston on Christmas Day. So if they, this is the Bucks' chance to send a message to the rest of the league that they are the top dogs right now.
Yeah, that's going to be the true test for this team. All three tough road games on this holiday travel schedule. It's going to be really important for the Bucks, and something for Bucks fans to keep an eye on is the availability of Chris Middleton for those three games. I think they obviously are going to need him against those top teams in the East. And so far, he's kind of been back and forth between playing two consecutive games. So if they can somehow find a way to keep Middleton in that lineup, I think that gives them the best chances to go out on the road and have some success. But Giannis is going to need some help. And hopefully Drew Holiday, Brooke Lopez, and Chris Middleton can all be there to assist in their efforts. That should be a fun Christmas Day game against the Celtics. Obviously, the Celtics lost just two bad ones to Orlando, as we noted. That's a game at home. They're going to be really trying to get back on track and make up for a bad loss so far this season.
But, you know, and we talked a little about this. There are some teams in the East that are just balling. I mean, how about Cleveland? All right. 21-11, third best record. 15-2 at home, but the Achilles heel there could very well be they're not that great on the road. They're only 6-9 on the road. And I mean, you got to be able to win on the road if you're going to be, you know, top shelf team. So we'll see. It's still early. They've only played 15, you know, road games, but Spider Mitchell, man, I mean, he's just lighting it up for those guys, shooting 43% from downtown. And I don't know about you. When I watch Darius Garland play, I see Kyrie Irving 2.0 in that guy. I get the same vibe watching that guy that I watched him the way he finishes at the rim acrobatically. He gets the defenders on skates. And when he takes a step back from distance, it just, I totally get like, you know, Kyrie Irving vibe watching that guy, Ross.
Yeah, no, I mean, he's got the range that Kyrie has. He's got a very similar handle. I'd obviously still say Kyrie's the most talented ball handler in the league, but Garland does put his defenders on skates, much like Kyrie. And when those two are going back and forth in tandem at the top of the key, it's really tough to defend, especially when you have the tandem bigs as well. Jarrett Allen has recently returned from injury, and Evan Mobley is just a star on the rise in the Eastern Conference. And between those four guys, it makes it very challenging for defenses to rotate and have the proper coverage to plug up the holes that Spida and Garland get into, or, you know, they'll find the big on the roll. So, Cleveland's been interesting. They definitely need to do a better job on the road. That has definitely been a struggle for them. But I think they'll continue to maintain a top five spot in this Eastern Conference.
And, you know, it's funny. I don't mean to be jumping around, but then there we just talked about Kyrie Irving 2.0. Yep. Then there's Kyrie Irving 1.0 with the Nets. Ever since he's come back from his, you know, suspension for his, prejudicial remarks in December, he's averaging 29, 6 rebounds, 5 dimes. And for the season, he's averaging 26, almost 5 boards, 4.5 dimes. And, you know, along with KD, I mean, we're seeing what that duo can do together. They've won 6 straight and 9 out of their last 10, Ross.
Yeah, I mean, what a relief that's got to be for Kevin Durant. I mean, I feel like for most of the season, their success has been on his shoulders. To have Kyrie back and playing at this such a high level, hitting game-winning shots on the road in Toronto, as he did earlier this past week, I mean, I think that's only elevating KD's game as well. He's playing a little bit more relaxed, playing with a little bit more confidence. And he know he has his counterpart out there to where if they bring the double teams, Kyrie's going to make them pay. And so far, that's what he's been doing is making other teams pay. And he's producing. And, Brooklyn is continuing to kind of just put the distractions aside. They've gotten their leader in Jacques Vaughn as a coach. And that's really starting to pay dividends for them.
You know, KD is just, you know, remarkably consistent. averaging over 30, more than six boards, more than five dimes. He actually is averaging more assists than Kyrie Irving, which is pretty impressive because KD, you know, he's willing to share it. I mean, he's not all about just, you know, getting the ball and never giving it back. Although in the third quarter against Detroit on Sunday, he wasn't giving it back except to the Pistons after it went through the net because he had 26 points in the third quarter on Sunday.
Yeah, I think a lot of the assist numbers go back to those double teams. I mean, when KD gets on a roll, there's no other option than to bring two. He's got to see double in front of him in order to stop that guy. I mean, he's 7 foot, and he can elevate and rise up over any defender in the league, and the only way to stop him is to have him give up the basketball. So I think that's where the assist numbers are increased. I mean, he's in the MVP conversation yet again this year. It's amazing that he just continues to maintain such a high level, even all these years later, being a guy that was a one and done, came into the league at 18, and truly is a joy to watch. I really hope NBA fans don't take his skill set for granted.
I know it seems we're getting a little top heavy here on the East, but there's still a couple teams that hopefully we can handle quickly before we start moving west. 76ers, 5 straight wins. Again, great at home, but struggling a bit on the road, only 5-7. Joel Embiid, I mean, he's leading the league in scoring, right? Yeah. That he kind of came out of nowhere. And James Harden's only played 15 games, but in the last six since he came back, he missed 14, came back. They're 5-1 since he came back, and he's averaging over 11 assists in those six games since he's returned. So his passing has been great. His scoring numbers are down as they were a bit last year. But it's like, you know what? If you're averaging 11 assists a game, we can live with you scoring 22 instead of, you know, 32. What do you think about the Sixers, Ross?
Yeah, I mean, they just had a successful homestand, starting the homestand off with an overtime victory over the Lakers. We mentioned that last week. Anthony Davis missed a key free throw at the end of regulation that would have likely ended it. They came away, won that game, and then they finished their homestand with an overtime win last night against the Toronto Raptors that were dying for a win. Pascal Siakam was balling out there. And, you know, they stuck with it and were able to pull out a huge win before they hit the road, I believe, for their next game. And Joel Embiid, I mean, what else is there to say? Leading the league in scoring. Another MVP-type year for him as well. I think the MVP this year, it's safe to say, is going to come out of the East. What do you think about that, Bruce?
Yeah, I mean, I would say, you know, the top three guys are probably Giannis, Tatum, and Embiid. But, you know, depending on what the Nets do, KD could be in the mix. I mean, I think you're right. I mean, to me, the East is way more interesting this season than, you know. And again, I realize I live in New England, so I watch a lot more East games. But, I mean, I got League Pass, so I watch, you know, other games too. But it's like, you know, it's like the two New York teams, right? We're going to talk about the Knicks now. But, I mean, all of these teams are just, like, fun to watch. But I agree with you. You know, how are you feeling? Who do you think has the early lead in the MVP race?
I would have, not to just please you here, Bruce, but I think it's got to be Jason Tatum as of right now. You know, he hasn't skipped a beat all season long, has been consistent, all for what, about 1 to 2 bad games, which, okay, is only human. Jason Tatum, you know, rebounding from the tough finals loss last year, trained a ton over the summer with his trainer, and has come back this season stronger than ever. I like Jason Tatum. He would be my pick right now. But my second guy on the list, we'll talk about a little bit later. He's actually in the Western Conference, but he's kind of got to dig himself and his team out of the hole right now. But that's just a little teaser for later. Let's talk a little bit about the New York Knicks. What have you seen since Thursday when we last discussed these Knickerbockers? What's standing out to you with this team as they continue to roll?
They've won 7 straight as we're recording. They're playing Golden State, so they could make it 8. I don't know if that game will be over when we're done, but they've got their big three. They've got Julius Randle. They've got RJ Barrett. They've got Jalen Brunson. And during the 7-game winning streak, all three of them have led the team in scoring at least twice. Randle's led them 3 times, Barrett twice, and Jalen Brunson twice. They represent three top college programs in Kentucky, Duke, and Villanova. And all three are lefties, Ross. Yep. So I have a coaching question for you. If you're an opposing coach and you're trying to scheme your defensive plans against three left-handed guys, what challenges does that pose for a coach or a coaching staff when more than half of the guys on the other team are left-handed? Does it matter?
It definitely does matter. And what a lot of smart coaches do, and I see the Knicks doing this quite often, which makes a lot of sense for the three lefties that they have, is they'll run plays where their momentum is carrying them to the left side of the floor. So if you run an Iverson cut up top for Jalen Brunson or RJ Barrett, they're typically going to start on the right wing and they're going to move to the left wing so that they're catching the ball heading towards the strong left side. But then you look at a guy like Julius Randle. He's a guy that's so sturdy, so strong, got big shoulders. He's the type of guy that he'll start left-handed and spin back right, but then he's able to bounce off you with his right shoulder and get back to his left hand when needed. So Julius Randle's a tough cover just because he is so strong, so steady, has a tremendous spin move in the lane. And then those other guys, I mean, Jalen Brunson does an extremely good job using his body in pick and rolls. Little undersized, but he's another sturdy, strong guy. And, you know, he carves out some space in the lane. And then RJ Barrett, as World B pointed out on our last podcast, starting to shoot the ball a lot better this year and continues to do so during this streak. They're going to continue to need him to play at a high level to withstand this streak. And I just think they're getting a steady diet of offense. I mean, every game, it seems like another guy outside of the big three of their big three lefties is stepping up. I think tonight, Quentin Grimes is one of those guys against the Warriors. He had like 12 first half points. They're getting some strong contributions off their bench. Deuce McBride is now coming in off the bench, providing some defensive energy. And so they just have the contributors around those big three playing at a high level as well.
Just to update everybody, so as we're recording, that the Knicks-Warriors game is early in the fourth quarter. The Knicks are ahead by 27 points in that game. So it may be that those guys on the Knicks aren't going to get their averages tonight because they're going to probably be sitting on the bench for some garbage time late in the game. Just a quick note about Brunson, because I've always told people you have to own your mistakes. I've always liked Jalen Brunson. I always thought he was a nice player. But when New York gave him all the money, I was thinking to myself, is this guy really going to be a difference maker for that team? I was questioning it. I'm not questioning it anymore. No. He really is a difference maker for that team. I was wrong, Jalen Brunson. I'm sorry. You were a second-round pick even when you were the college player of the year. Last year, you made $1.8 million. This year, you're making $27.7 million. Good for you, brah. You deserve your money. Great job by you.
And to be honest, Jalen Brunson didn't come as a surprise to me. Fun fact for you, Bruce, and all our listeners, he actually attended the same high school as my wife. So growing up and just being around the community, my other side of the family was able to follow Brunson's career quite closely and locally. And since he joined the league after his successful stint at Villanova in college, you know, they just continue to assure me that dude's a winner. That dude's a winner. And he's done nothing but prove it. I mean, he helped Dallas, you know, make it last year pretty far in the playoffs and was Luka's right-hand man, or I should say left-hand man. And they miss him this year, you know, and the Mavericks' loss has been New York's gain. So really, really excited for Jalen. I'm glad he got an opportunity to be the floor general for a team like the Knicks, and it that signing's paying off for them.
And I know we, in honor of the Knicks' big three left-handed guys, later on in the show, Ross and I are going to tell you guys our three favorite left-handed NBA players. So stick with us for a little while, because I think you're really going to enjoy some of the names we come up with. But Ross, I think it's time for us to head out west. You want to take us out to your neck of the woods?
Yeah, let's go ahead and do that. And we're going to go ahead and call this topic the rematch, a book on revenge. That's right. Devin Booker with 58 points back on his home floor against the top team in the West in what's become one of the best young rivalries in the Western Conference. Devin Booker's game that night, I think it has to go down as undoubtedly the best game of D-Book's career. And I've got plenty of facts to back it up, Bruce. Are you ready for this?
Hit it.
All right, buckle up. Devin Booker dropped 25 points in rapid-fire succession, setting a new arena record in Phoenix. He also, in that game, reached 12,000 career points, becoming the sixth youngest player in NBA history to do it, only behind LeBron James, Kevin Durant, Kobe Bryant, Carmelo Anthony, and Tracy McGrady. And he became the first player in franchise history with at least two 50-point games in two different seasons. And a hot take time for you here, Bruce. You know, Devin Booker does have a 70-point game against your Celtics and a 59-point game against the Jazz on his resume. But both those games came in losses. So I think this one should arguably go down as his career high. I think pulling out the W matters in career games. And as an ultimate competitor like Devin Booker is, I think he would agree. But what's your take on that?
I have no beef with anything that you just said, but I do have a question. I mean, yes, he had 58 in the big comeback against New Orleans. He was going for 61, Ross. What was the deal there?
That was a great message. I honestly had no issues with that and really loved it. You know, I think it just continued to amp up this rivalry. That shot, you know, goes back to Zion Williams's late in the game garbage time windmill dunk at the end of regulation. And, you know, Devin Booker said it best in his post game. He said, play until the final buzzer. And he left it at that. I thought it was cold-blooded. And New Orleans knew, you know, what was going down. And it was nice to see him throw a little salt in the wound and continue to fire up this rivalry.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I think that's always good, you know, provided it doesn't lead to fisticuffs. That's the kind of stuff that gets guys fired up. But, you know, last week I was asking the question, has Chris Paul lost something off his fastball? Well, I think in the game against the Lakers on Monday night, he was throwing high heat. Granted, he was playing against a glorified G League squad with no LeBron and no AD out there. But he had 28 season high against the Lakers on Monday. In his past three games, he's averaging over 20, only 12 on the season. So you can see he's starting to kind of get himself together. So, you know, never underestimate a Hall of Fame talent like Chris Paul. I mean, as good of a player as he is, I think he's about as mentally tough as a basketball player can be.
Yeah, he seems like he's really starting to get his rhythm. To be honest, at this time, though, he doesn't really have a choice. I mean, Cameron Payne, I believe he is out tonight in their game. So Josh Okogie, who's been playing extremely well, not really a point guard, so they're having to put the ball in Devin Booker's hands and keeping Devin Booker out there on the floor a little more than they probably would like to this early on in the season. But with Cameron Payne out, I mean, there's really no other options than to Chris Paul to find his groove. And fortunately for Phoenix, as of recently, you know, as you mentioned in that Lakers game, he did look like he did have his fastball. Just got to be very careful. You know, we'll talk about Anthony Davis a little bit later here, but, you know, he's kind of trending towards that injury history now with, you know, Father Time and just the miles that are on those legs. And I just get very, very uncomfortable, you know, counting Chris Paul in for every game this year.
Well, look, the guy's what, like 37 years old? He's in his 17th season. I mean, and there's just, it's inevitable that, you know, when you get to be a certain age, your body will break down. But we all know that the Phoenix medical staff has the reputation of being able to kind of help guys maximize whatever their, you know, or minimize their physical limitations, I guess you could say, with great training. And, yeah, I mean, going into the season, I felt Phoenix was the team to beat in the Western Conference. I felt that way last year, too. Was wrong. You know, they're, what, 19-12, and they haven't really been spectacular. So I think I'm still going to ride with the Suns for a little while. But, again, that's another team that needs to step it up on the road a little bit. They're only 5-9 away from home. So excellent at home, 14-3. But again, you know, you're not winning championships unless you're, you know, a good road team, period.
Yep. No disagreement there. And just a little tidbit there on the medical staff. What's interesting about that, now the Suns do still continue to have a strong medical staff, great staff in place there helping keep those guys healthy. But in my time in the historic athletic training staff that was in Phoenix is now in New Orleans. Aaron Nelson and Tom Maestat, they went ahead and ventured off to New Orleans to go ahead and start a program out there. And they've been working a ton with that franchise and with Zion. And that between the two teams internally has sparked a little bit more of the rivalry too. I think definitely having some familiarity with that staff, and I know Aaron Nelson, Tom Maestat, were able to work with guys like Devin Booker. Like, there's some familiarity there. And Willie Green was an assistant coach for the Suns prior to landing that job. So there's a lot of ties between those two organizations, which makes it a lot of fun.
Well, you know, when it comes to physical conditioning or injuries or whatever, I don't think anybody is more susceptible to getting hurt on a yearly basis than our buddy Anthony Davis in Los Angeles, Ross. What's your take on what's going on with that dumpster fire out there?
Yeah, they are in a world of trouble right now. I'm not sure there's a particular answer that solves this riddle without Anthony Davis. He had been playing at a high MVP level the last couple of weeks. And without him, I think the only option this team has is to go small and to run. I think in the games that I've watched since AD has gone down, they've had their most success getting out in transition and running the basketball. Last night or two nights ago against the Suns, Dennis Schroeder had 30 points. They're going to need him to elevate his offensive game, look to score more than maybe just distribute. And, of course, getting LeBron James out in the open floor with the basketball, with the wings flying on both sides of him, is always a scary sight for defenses. So they're going to need to run more, and Lonnie Walker is going to have to step up as well. He's not a really good spot-up shooter, but when he's out running the lanes hard and able to cut and find open space, he can be effective and he can put points on the board for that team. And without AD, I'm worried about that offense being able to score. And then you shift to the defensive side of things. I'm saying, hey, this offense needs to run. Well, that starts with getting stops, and they're without one of the best defenders in the league in Anthony Davis.
Right. Just to review for people, I mean, Anthony Davis is going to be missing about 4 weeks. So he went down last week. So he's out for at least another 3+ weeks. He injured his right foot against Denver last Friday. And according to our pal, World B. Freer, who's not with us tonight, unfortunately, but has offered contributions to help us serve you, the listeners, in the two seasons prior to this one, AD has missed more than half of the Lakers' games. He's missed 78 out of 154 games, which is just over half. He seems to miss significant time every year due to injury. And, you know, I know it's the old cliche, the greatest ability is availability, and you know, he isn't always available. And I always worry when bigs have foot injuries. It has ruined many careers of talented big guys. Yao Ming's career, which was a Hall of Fame career, even in so far as he did play, he lost years because of foot injuries. My buddy Bill Walton had over 30 surgeries on his ankles and feet. So I just, you know, AD is such a brilliant player, and he's, you know, he's a Hall of Fame talent. But gosh, I mean, you know, the injuries, especially to the lower extremities, I'm wondering, is this guy ever going to play like 80 games in a season?
I definitely wouldn't bet on it. And if I was a Lakers fan, don't hold your breath on that. They're really going to have to manage his usage. Unfortunately, they don't have many tools around this team to really get him off his feet. They're just slim pickings off that bench due to their salary constraints. And I don't know. It's pretty ugly in la-la land these days with the Lakers. And I'm not holding out much hope here. I think they're really going to struggle in these next 4 weeks, as you mentioned, when AD is out. The one glimmer of hope, trying to have a glass half full approach here for Lakers fans and basketball fans, that tune in to watch LeBron. Keep an eye on rookie Max Christie. I'm not sure if you've seen him yet, Bruce, but he's a rookie out of Michigan State. He's starting to find a much-needed niche role on the perimeter for this team, and he's brought a recent spark off this Lakers bench, knocking down spot-up threes. He has at least one or more triples in four of their last games. The one game he didn't have a triple was in the absence of LeBron James, so I think he really helps LeBron kind of free up some space as guys can't just fully blitz and double him. You got to keep an eye on where he's at, and just a small glimmer of hope to end on a positive note here for the Lakers.
Well, you know, the Lakers are going to still be relevant. They're always going to be relevant because they're the Lakers. But LeBron, who turns 38 years old on December 30th, he's now in his 20th season. He's averaging 27, which is right around his career average. He's 700 going into, as of tonight, he's 732 points away from Kareem's career record of 38,387. So he'll need about 30 more games to catch him. But you know what? That may kind of be all he has left to play for this season. I mean, that does not look like a playoff team to me, Ross.
Not at all, especially when you're considering the bottom of the play-in spots right now. We got the Golden State Warriors right there. And, of course, at some point this season, Steph Curry is going to return. They, as we've mentioned, have some opportunities to make some trades, have some wiggle room with the roster. Lakers don't really have many assets to go ahead and improve this team with what they have going for them right now, unless they're willing to kind of give off some of those future first-round picks that might be very valuable in the future. I don't see this team making the playoffs, but we'll have to keep an eye on that moving forward. But I think LeBron's in some trouble for this year. But coming up next, we're definitely going to have to get into some betting here, Bruce. Let's help these listeners make some money.
Well, if they listen to you, they probably got a very good chance to do it because you have a pretty good track record here.
I sure do. And I do want to mention on our last podcast, I was talking about the 3-point shots, and I particularly mentioned the Dallas Mavericks. And I mentioned three players, Tim Hardaway Jr., Dorian Finney-Smith, and Luka Doncic. In their next game, Dorian Finney-Smith hit two threes. Luka Doncic hit three threes, and Tim Hardaway hit one three. So I was able to cash that parlay. Hopefully some of our listeners went ahead and took my advice and scored some winnings themselves. And so we're off to a great start here on 48 Minutes talking some bets. So today, Bruce, what I wanted to do is talk about an IR departure and arrival. And we're going to start with an arrival off the IR in Gordon Hayward of the Charlotte Hornets, obviously a team most fans aren't watching on a regular basis. But as far as a betting and fantasy player, Gordon Hayward is completely slept on. This is a guy that's, you know, of course, being overpaid and playing in Charlotte, so you kind of forget about him. But he's a solid all-around guy. You know, you can expect 12 to 15 points a game from him, typically grabs 5 to 6 rebounds. And, you know, he's typically good for 2 to 4 assists as well. They got LaMelo Ball back that can, you know, distribute the ball extremely well and find Gordon in open areas. And Gordon also does an extremely good job moving without the basketball. He's just a very smart, high IQ basketball player. So if he's available in your fantasy league, I would certainly keep an eye on him. Go ahead and put a flag on maybe adding him if you need some wing depth. And then for betting, I think he's a guy if you're doing a same game parlay plus or doing a same game parlay with the Hornets, definitely consider putting Gordon Hayward in your bet slip.
You know, I've always been a fan of Gordon. It was just terrible that when Boston signed him, you know, he got injured pretty much before he got his warmups off when he ruined his ankle in that game. And he was never really the same in Boston after that. And you know, he was fortunate in that Charlotte gave him a big contract, even though his performance just, you know, before that probably didn't warrant that kind of money. But I think Charlotte had the money to spend, you know, maybe because they were winning money, you know, listening to your gambling advice. But I'm happy for him. He's a classy guy. And I think he's a winning type player and does provide some leadership for a young team in Charlotte.
He certainly does. That's, you know, a guy Steve Clifford will depend on, especially, I'm not sure if you saw his rant about not competing defensively. He's a guy that's going to compete defensively and do what it takes to try to put this team in a position to be competitive. So I'm sure it's a sigh of relief to Clifford and his coaching staff to get a guy and a veteran like Gordon Hayward back. I always certainly enjoy watching him. Now for the arrival to the IR, I think it goes without saying that man is Anthony Davis. So who on the Lakers could be a good fantasy or betting asset to look into? For me, it's Thomas Bryant. He has gotten the starting nod over Damian Jones for that starting five position. He's an energetic rim running big that doesn't have an off switch. So he's going to play hard every night. Hopefully he can stay out of foul trouble. That would be my one main concern. But this Lake Show team needs to run. As I mentioned in our last segment there, they got to play in transition. And with or without LeBron, I think Thomas Bryant's going to find ways to be effective out there just with his energy and being at the right place at the right time. So Thomas Bryant's a guy that should be able to get you 8 to 12 points a game, 6 to 8 rebounds. And, you know, at times he can stretch it out to the perimeter and knock down an open three in a pick and pop situation. So for fantasy purposes and betting terms alike, I like Thomas Bryant to go ahead and contribute for the Lakers squad.
You know, he's a big dude. So, you know, you mentioned how the Lakers need to knock down some shots from outside. So maybe he can also do some work, you know, setting screens for some of those guys and helping them get open for some better looks. Because, yeah, I mean, they need everything, Ross.
So those are our pieces here for betting. Keep an eye on Gordon Hayward and Thomas Bryant. Those guys could go ahead and help you out on your next parlay or maybe for your fantasy team. Here on 48 Minutes, we have a lightning round listing off our top three NBA lefties of all time. Bruce, I'll let you go first and give me your number three.
Well, you know, as I said earlier in the show, we're doing this in honor of the Knicks big three, all of whom are left-handers. So we thought, hey, this is a great opportunity. Let's go through our three favorite left-handed players. So we're going to go in reverse order. My number three is Chris Mullin, dream teamer, Hall of Famer, ESPN colleague and friend, great mid-range shooter, original Run TMC member, nearly 18,000 career points. Molly could stroke it, and he's one of the best guys ever. Ross, who's your number three?
At number three, I got Mr. James Harden, one of the best NBA scorers of all time. Actually had the chance to work with and help train James Harden during the summer of 2015. His footwork combined with his strong handle is off the charts, and he's always been one of my favorite offensive guys to watch in the league. Just a master of the craft.
All right, so my number two most favorite left-handed player of all time, Big Red, Dave Cowens, boyhood idol of mine, Celtics Hall of Famer, MVP in 1973, two-time champion, Hall of Famer, intense competitor, played center at 6'9", back when a lot of centers were 7 feet, 7'2". He used to give Kareem Abdul-Jabbar fits with his nonstop energy. Who's your number two, Ross?
At number two, I got the 2008 Olympic gold medalist and longtime Bucks star shooting guard, Michael Redd. I got to know Michael really well through a family friend as a sophomore at Marquette, and he's just a tremendously humble human being on and off the court. Great teammate and an underrated bucket getter.
I agree on Michael Redd, a great, great human being. So my number one most favorite all-time left-handed NBA player is, little drum roll, Bill Russell, the greatest winner in NBA history. If they kept track of block shots when this guy played, he'd probably be the all-time leader, and a lot of them probably with his left hand. He was not a great shooter or a scorer, but he was a rebounder, and his defense were his calling cards. Greatest winner ever, Bill Russell, my all-time favorite left-handed NBA player. Ross, you're number one.
Last but not least, my number one is Brandon Jennings, another Buck here. As a rookie, he brought a heartbeat and swagger back to a franchise that was absolutely flatlined. Being around the team to witness his young Buck years will forever be among my favorite memories, from dropping 55 points as a rookie against Steph Curry in just his seventh career NBA game to carrying the Bucks to the playoffs He brought a glimmer of hope to Milwaukee and brought some good PR when the team needed it most.
Brandon Jennings, gotta love it.
Well, Bruce, any final thoughts for this edition of 48 Minutes? It's been a fun show so far.
Yes, it has. Well, I want to give some love to the Joker, Nikola Jokic. Had a triple-double versus Charlotte on Sunday with 40 points, 27 rebounds, and 10 assists. Only Wilt Chamberlain and Elgin Baylor have ever had 40, 25, and 10 in a game. Wilt did it multiple times, but it's the 81st career triple-double for Joker, which is number six all-time, okay? And everyone ahead of him has played at least 353 more games than he has. So, Joker, great work.
Nikola Jokic, what can you say about the guy? I mean, he's got a timeless game. You know, he's unathletic, he's slow, but it's effective, and nobody has an answer for him. I've got nothing else to say about the guy. He's truly a tremendous talent. We've never seen anything like the Joker, and boy, do I watch a ton of Denver Nuggets games, just keeping an eye on him and watching him, you know, operate on the offensive end. That was a good pick there and a shout out.
For sure. I also want to give a little bit of love to Kemba Walker, who has had a rough few years since leaving Charlotte. He played his third game for Dallas on Saturday against Cleveland. He had 32 points. He's battled injuries. He's bounced around the past four seasons, but he is truly one of the really good guys in the NBA. And it's great that he had this game. He's averaging 15 in the three games since he's been back. Hopefully he can rejuvenate his career in Dallas. And Ross, one more quick one. There's a little bit of a surprise. I didn't tell you about this one. Damian Lillard became the Blazers franchise all-time scoring leader on Monday, passing Clyde Drexler. He now has 18,048 points at age 32. He's averaging a career best 29.4 per game this season.
Wow. Yeah. It's always Dame time in Portland. Really happy to see him at the top of the franchise history books. A guy that's been committed to that organization from day one, and that seems to not be changing anytime soon. I love his commitment to a small market like Portland. I wish there were more guys like Damian Lillard out there.
That's right. And Ross, I know you're gonna take us home, but just want to say, Michael Freer, World B. Freer, we missed you this week. We appreciate your contributions. A lot of the numbers we talked about in this show came from you. So we look forward to having you back in a couple days. Ross, land this plane, would you?
Yes, I will. And World B., you are missed. Want to thank everybody for listening to this edition of 48 Minutes. We will be back with you, available wherever podcasts can be found on the Believe Network on Friday. Looking forward to that show, having World B back in the house with us. Thanks for tuning into this edition. Be sure to like and subscribe the podcast, and have a good day.